Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey guys, it's Sarah here. I just want to quickly flag that in today's interview with Claire Dubois, we do cover off some fairly heavy stuff around sexual abuse. Now, if that's something you're not comfortable with listening to, then what I do recommend is that you skip ahead to around about the 10-minute mark, and then it continues on to some good, juicy, important stuff.
Climate change is the gauntlet that we have created to lay down to ourselves to say, are you going to discover what you're made of?
Hi, I'm Sarah Wilson, and this is Wild, a podcast about living a more beautiful and fired up life. Here we will continue my 10-year nomadic journey, living out of one bag, in search of more connection, more awakeness, less consuming, less loneliness, and less bloody scrolling. I'll be inviting you to join me in finding better ways to radically love and save our one wild and precious life on this planet. About 6 months ago, my friend Nick sent me a link to an interview with Claire Dubois because he reckoned, she talks your language, Sarah. I'd never heard of Claire, and it was a super long interview on some deeply esoteric podcast. But I actually listened to the full 2 hours and I was moved to my viscera from the moment she launched her gloriously fired up, inspired riff. Claire talks a profoundly wild idea that, yes, Nick, you're right, I very much like to speak to. And it's this. We are about to send ourselves, as a species, extinct. No one is going to come and save us, but trees might just. So who is Claire?
I am the founder of Tree Sisters, and I am a troublemaking, edgewalking activist, poetess, and creatress with a deep, abiding love of our natural world.
She's a British entrepreneur and former business coach who now lives in California. She's a global leader in arguing that our salvation can be led by business, by embedding trees into every financial transaction. Indeed, she argues that trees can fix many things and that they can teach us how to be human again. Yep, I'm on that page too. She talks in very long river analogies, me too, and she also cries a lot from the recognition of it all. Ditto. I'll just flag that she refers to a few terms throughout the talk that I might just quickly explain now. So there's Gaia, which just means earth. She also mentions the Koji, who are the indigenous peoples of the Sierra Nevada Mountains in northern Colombia. Anyway, let's get into it. Claire Dubois, welcome to Wild.
Thank you very much.
You've got a epically wild, edgewalking life story, and I'm wondering if you would mind telling us a little bit about it to kick off with. And I know you've credited your arrival into this space to your relationship with your father, but not in the way most people might think. Do you mind telling us a little bit about that?
Wow, you're one of those that's going to go straight in at the deep end.
For the jugular.
you didn't warn me about that, did you, woman? So I'll just frame this in the esoteric way that you don't want me to do, which is that I see things as, I don't see anything as coincidental, and I don't see anything as without cause, and nor do I see anything without purpose. And so those people that decide to arrive into an extraordinarily difficult life situation, I think it's because there is purpose to it, there is meaning to it, and the recovery from it carries within it the seed of some form of unleashing or some form of personal transformation within which there is benefit to more than them.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I had a disastrous relationship with my father. I mean, he was frighteningly a headmaster who was, he was a paedophile, an alcoholic, a philanderer, a misogynist, a roaring hater of women who basically pretended I didn't exist for the first 3 months of my life and then spent the rest of the time trashing me. And significant physical bodily harm, significant emotional harm. And I grew up not thinking that being a woman was safe, not having any relationship with my femininity, being terrified of myself, being sort of straitjacketed by fears and beliefs and internalized dominance patterning, what that had me dominate and override myself in every way because I didn't know anything else. And that didn't stop there, really. I mean, I continued with my own profoundly unhealthy relationship with men until I discovered that that was not actually normal, which we all get to eventually. But then I was sent off to an all-girls boarding school where I was mercilessly bullied because I was so kind of trampled by the violence that I'd come from. By the time I got to boarding school, I was just the ultimate target because I couldn't speak properly and I was all my spatial awareness had gone and I couldn't defend myself. And so I was the weakling that got, you know, the delights of how young girls can be when they try to gang up on you, which we all know, those of us that have been bullied by women, just how lovely that is. And so I lost all faith in women as well. So when I had the car crash that gave me Tree Sisters, and this was 10 years ago, 11 years ago now, and I had been in southern India working for an agroforestry initiative, had fallen in love with this social strategy that saw them trying to basically gather, you know, 167 million people together to reforest their state, which was becoming desertified, had fallen in love with it. And I'd been distilling the social strategy and I'd come back to the UK and I was looking for somebody to pick up this idea of a reforestation revolution, you know, like how do we get everybody, the grassroots, to fully take responsibility for the restoration of nature? And I was looking for that person, and it was on the way to a communications meeting where I was going to hand over my strategy and hand over everything that I'd learned in India and all this like 7-point thing that I distilled that was why this would work and how they could do it. And I got about, I don't know, 100 yards away from my house, swerved on ice, headed for an edge and crashed into a tree, and the tree literally stopped me going over an edge, which is like this perfect metaphor for, you know, reforestation stopping humanity going over an edge. Only it took me about 4 years to actually realize the metaphor, so life must have been going, oh, for God's sake, she's so slow.
What else do we have to do to get this message through her head?
You know, like, ram her into a tree, you know, like, God, she's slow. Anyway, at the point of impact, inside the car, there's this flash of white light and there's two words, the experiment, literally hovering right in front of my nose. And I'm looking at these two words and this male voice starts talking as if somebody turned the radio on in my car. And it said, humanity is running out of time, but it's not over yet. It's going to take all of you rising to the challenge to get through what's coming. The single greatest threat facing humanity is fear of failure. But you can get over fear of failure by calling everything you do an experiment, because you can't fail an experiment, you can only learn. And even wrapped around a tree, I thought this was brilliant. And I said, well, what's the experiment? And back came, you have to reforest the tropics within 10 years. at which point my life flashes before my eyes. I see everything that's got me to that point. I then am shown everything that's to come. And I see myself on stage, a global leader, blah, 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 being the front of a huge charity. Bear in mind, at that point, I'm a total introvert. I'm a healer who does work in my back room. You know, I've never worked for an organization. I can barely function on a computer. I've never worked inside of a team. And I've got this future that's being shown to me. And I'm like, you've got to be absolutely kidding me. At which point the voice continues and it starts to say, you have to mobilize the women are the missing piece, the women are the womb carriers and earth is womb. Women understand the cycles of life and death that happens in their bodies every month. Women and nature share a common history. What's been done to one has been done to the other. Feminine consciousness is the consciousness of seasons, of cycles, of health, of well-being on the planet, blah, 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 all of this stuff. Then your project is called Tree Sisters. It's a crowdfunding mechanism. You have to make it as normal to give back to nature as it currently is to take nature for granted. Blah, blah, blah. All this, like, you know, take dictation. And then it ends with women have to remember who and what they are. Feminine consciousness has to be reinstated or it's over. End of transmission.
This is all while you're sitting in the car. Like,
it was no, at this point, I'd got out of the car and I was gathering bits of car. And I was walking back up the road, crying, carrying bits of car home, listening to the same voice going, blah, 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 blah. And I, you know, I couldn't switch it off. Like I wasn't. And then most annoying thing about it was everything it was saying made complete sense to me. Mm. You know, it was like, and people have said to me afterwards, do you think that was an external voice? Do you think that came from inside you? You know, do you think that was always there inside you? And it was like, I have no idea. Like, who knows where these voices come from? It's pissed me off forever that it was a male. You know, it's just like, okay, am I going to sit here and do what I'm told again? But actually, you know, I love men. I genuinely love men.
I also love the symbolism that you were carrying bits of sort of a symbol of consumer culture. Parts of your car as you're getting these messages, you know, the feminine getting her big wake-up call carrying a car, you know.
Dead car bits. And I get home and I ring my husband whose car I'd just written off and I was just like, Alex, I'm really sorry. I'm not going to be there in time because he was already in London and he was just like, why are you crying? And I'm like, I've crashed your car. And were you all right? Yes. Why are you crying? Because I've got to reforest the tropics within 10 years. And I can't do it. And he went completely silent. And then he just said, well, somebody's got to do it.
I mean, that was the culmination of things. But if we go back to, I guess, you being a kid, and my understanding is that you suffered quite terrible internal and external injuries from that experience with your father from a very young age, and that this went on for quite some time. But I know that at some point you have said to yourself, and I don't know whether it came from the car crash or earlier, but you could either bow to fear or you could choose to love life, and that the love that you're talking of was the love of planet. Did that happen sort of earlier?
You've really done your research, haven't you?
I am that kind of person, yeah.
I'm feeling well nailed in this moment. I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, that's a daily choice. Because there's not a day. It's not like you take an introvert and you turn them into an extrovert. I'm not an extrovert out on the global stage. Like first time I got on stage, it was like 4 days of vomiting and diarrhea beforehand, you know, and it's only reduced by then. My husband was saying a couple of years ago in Rome, you walked away from the lectern. Like, you were, you know, your knees were not knocking so strongly you could actually walk away from the lectern. I was like, I know, I found my feet and I could walk without falling over and I didn't forget what it, you know, like, I don't find this easy, but I have made a choice to hand my life over.
Look, I want to get to the wild idea that I guess struck me when I first heard you speak, and it's this idea that we're about to send ourselves extinct. Those tipping points are coming, if not already starting to tip. No one is going to come and save us, but trees might just be able to. So I might unpack it bit by bit. The first bit being this idea that, you know, the sixth extinction is upon us
And I think you've spoken to some Indigenous leaders who've talked about 2026. Climate scientists put it potentially in the next sort of 100 years, depending on what your definition of humanity is and the human experience. You know, we probably will continue to live, but will it be the same experience? I was going to ask you, how do you cope with this? What are your feelings on it? What's your take on this idea that we're close?
I trust Indigenous people more than I trust scientists.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Why is that?
That's not to say that I don't value science, because science is measuring what is so, and what is so is not 100 years out. It's not 50 years out. It's not 10 years out. And they know it. They know it. Why I trust Indigenous people is because they, some of them, not all of them, what we've done to the native people in our country, I'm not American. In America, in the USA, has been, and equally Australia, you know, we have done so much extraordinary damage to the Indigenous peoples of these mighty continents that many of them are not so deeply connected as they used to be, because they're living with horrific trauma. And there are still those in the Amazon rainforest, in the Congo Basin, who, you know, around the world, in Siberia, in, you know, Alaska, who do know how to live in right relationship with the natural world, and who do experience their bodies as an extension of her, and who do know how to listen to her, and who do know how to change the weather, and who do know how to manifest water from putting crystals in the earth, and who do know that there is a way of being in relationship consciously with a conscious planet that can create a manifested reality that those of us that are dissociated have no concept of. So they both have the ability to communicate, the ability to commune, the ability to listen. So when I hear that Indigenous leaders from tribes all over the world have gathered and completely separate from each other are saying they can't see past 2026, I listen, because they were shocked that they all had the same timeline. And what they saw before 2026 was catastrophic climate change.
So what Indigenous cultures have arrived at this same sort of date?
I wasn't there, so I'm not going to quote, but I know that initially the Kogi were there. I know there were Bushmen from the Kalahari. I know there were people from Siberia. There were native people from this continent. I think there were up to 21 different leaders. Mm. I wasn't there, so I'm not going to quote it well, but I know people who were there, who have passed it on. And that when I heard that, shocked the shit out of me. I mean, it shocked the shit out of me. And I've, you know, the IPCC report, all the rest of it, they're all saying, oh, we've got 12 years. And then you hear other people say, well, they doctored it. They know we've got 7, you know, and that was closer to the truth when that initially came out, whenever that was.
That was the 5th report. The 6th one doesn't mention anything along these lines. And in fact, what I should say is actually it was a follow-up statement from the UN regarding those 12 years. But look, regardless, I mean, and I agree, the IPCC report is a conservative take on everything, because of course they have to get close to 200 governments around the world to sign off on it. So, but regardless, science, Indigenous takes on it, there is a palpable sense that, oh my goodness, everything that we took for granted, i.e. the continuation of humanity on this planet and...
Seasons.
That's your answer. You've jumped to what I'm trying to get to here, is how do you cope? What's the logic that you work to? And I guess I want to get to the second part of that wild idea that no one is going to come and save us. And it takes me back to to the relationship with your father and the fact that you had to get over this idea of the victim consciousness. And I think, you know, this idea, this very patriarchal idea, if I can use that language, that daddy will come and fix it, that somebody else will come and fix it, and somebody will save us. Somebody apart from me, I just need to continue consuming and just getting on with my life, but somebody out there will do it.
Gosh, you've just, that's so much that you've just said that I could go in so many different directions.
Go where you need to go.
Daddy sure as shit isn't going to save us. That's for sure. Daddy has been running an economy that requires the death of nature and is in no fit, you know, has no desire whatsoever to transform that into something that's not going to line his pockets. So we can't look to Daddy. Even though we seem to be, you know, electing strong men who are even more committed to destroying the planet faster than we can decide that that might not be a good idea. I met Barbara Marx Hubbard on an aeroplane, having driven for about 10 hours through Colorado, having seen nothing but dead and dying trees. And I was sobbing my eyes out and sitting on this plane, completely incoherent, realized, I looked up and realized across the aisle from me is Barbara Marx Hubbard.
Can you just explain to everyone who Barbara Marx Hubbard is? Yeah.
She passed a few years ago now, but I think 86. She was one of the planet's most luminary thinkers, the head of conscious evolution. She was extraordinary. An author, an activist, a teacher of consciousness. And she woke up and she saw me and she like reached across and I was just like, Barbara. And she was like, you know, oh my God, you know, this is destiny. And I was just like, I was crying. I was like, Barbara, I can't do it. I can't do it. The trees are all leaving. Like, I can't do this. I can't keep my heart open. Like, this is too painful. And she looked at me like these Barbara eyes that she's got. And she said, you have to find your intimacy with the evolutionary impulse. You have to find your intimacy with the evolutionary impulse. And I got this complete transmission of like, boof, oh, I'm taking it all personally. Okay, we're in this mammoth phase of change. And what if this is the crucible that we have created for our own emergence? You know, point of fact, we have no idea what we're capable of. I mean, put Daddy out of the picture for a minute. We've been taught a human being is a consumer. That's not what we are. We've been taught women are, you know, lesser beings. That's not what we are. We've been taught men are supposed to be like this. That's not what they are. We have got the DNA of every living species inside our so-called junk DNA. We have no idea what we're capable of. And when you spend time with Indigenous people who have not been severed from their roots and their lineages and from their connection to life, they know. They know what's possible. What's difficult for me is to get my head around the reality that we might wake up in time to be able to actually drop the state of separation that we're in order to be able to unify enough to be able to come into relationship with Gaia and work with her. But I also don't believe that the feminine would rise at the last minute when it's too late. Therefore, we simply cannot see. And when I've sat with Indigenous peoples and talked about this date of 2026, what some of them have said is we just can't see beyond. So we don't know what's coming. We don't know. We do know catastrophic climate change is coming. That is unavoidable. And yeah, they can see it. And it's already here. And why we think we've got any carbon budget left, why we think we can get to 2 degrees when almost 1.5, we're pretty much, I live in a dying forest. I live in California. There are fires absolutely everywhere. We're in the worst drought in, you know, 1,200 years.
Here in Australia, we're already at 1.44 above pre-industrial temperatures. Yeah.
It's raining in Greenland. They've never had rain in Greenland. You know, Siberia is on fire. It's like, that's just the science. And that's what I mean by I trust the Indigenous people. And how do I stay sane? Because I have to arrange myself in the belief that the reason I have incarnated now and taken on the role that I've been given, the reason so many change makers around the world have taken on what they've been given, is because there is a chance. There is a chance. We can't see it because we don't have the mental capacity at the level of consciousness that we're at now to think past the mechanics of a world that we think we understand. Well, we don't understand the mechanics of the world, not really, and nor do we understand what it means to be a human being.
So can I just clarify for people listening and finding, you know, mentions of Gaia and the feminine principle and all of this kind of thing probably
maybe new,
yeah. So the victim consciousness, you know, and as I say, you know, you've worn a lot of the storyline that you're now trying to share on your body. So the victim consciousness of a little girl who is at the mercy of her father, it can make you stay there. You can live in fear or you can choose to live in love and love of planet. And you've made that transition. That's, from what I can gather, what you're saying humanity needs to go through.
The victim consciousness is a space of fear. Consumption is a space of restriction and fear. And we need to move into this next sort of, it's like, I think you've referred to it as an evolutionary leap. I the Barbara story, I just want to go back to also, if you can just break down what she said to you, you need to get, was it intimate with the evolutionary
impulse.
What does that mean for you and what can it mean for the rest of us?
I think the solutions to our world come through intimacy. Intimacy being the willingness to feel and the willingness to love, to care, to feel that love, to feel that connection, to allow love of place, love of person, love of everything mm-hmm. to come in such a way that if it's dying in front of you, you feel the heartbreak of that. And then that heartbreak, which is your love made visible in a way, galvanizes you into action. Intimacy, lack of intimacy is what allows us to, you know, do desperate things to all the animals on our planet. It's what allows us to do desperate things to the people on our planet and the forests of our planet and the oceans of our planet and just think, oh yeah, I just want to eat that, or I just want to buy that, or I just want to, because there's no connection. It's a complete loss of intimacy. We're not in fundamental relationship. The indigenous custodians of the Amazon are. They live inside a living forest of which they are a part. They will put their lives on the line because there's no difference between their bodies and that forest. They understand that if the forest goes, it's all over, it's for all of us.
That's something that I think I've heard you talk about, is that what we're doing at the moment, and we've done for hundreds, thousands of years, is we're consuming, we're using plastics, and we're letting rivers be polluted, and that entails, for us to be able to do that, that entails not being able to see what we're abusing. And I think you've said...
Or feel it.
Yeah, or feel it, exactly. See being a way of feeling, being intimate, and that represents a deep, deep pain in us. It's almost so painful we can't bear ourselves, and so we run from the intimacy because we would have to see it. We would have to feel it. And the truth of it is so incredibly, incredibly painful. But the point is, it's an incongruence. I think, and I think people listening who come to this podcast are aware of an incongruence with the way we're meant to be feeling and living and connecting. We're not connected to that truth. That pain is really real, isn't it? That disconnect.
Pain is incredibly real. It's incredibly real. And I believe it's the root of consumption. Because ultimately, our natural state is belonging. It's profound belonging to a natural world of which we are a part, where we feel ourselves completely woven in. And I've had that experience. You know, I have had times in my life where, through various circumstances, I've gone into a state of unity consciousness and I have felt my indivisibility. And in those moments, there is no insecurity. I can't even remember what insecurity feels like. Like, it's a word that means nothing, because I am so completely belonging and part of. You can't do power over. Because there's just power with. You're just part of. It's extraordinary. And in that, you know, in the absence of that, why do we need to keep consuming? What, you know, what is it that drives us? What is it that drives us to alcohol? What is it that drives us to more stuff? Why does it need to be bigger and better and faster and everything all the time? Like, what's the hole that we can't stop filling? And if we were woven into back into the matrix of life and felt completely at one, would we need to keep building bigger and bigger fortresses around ourselves to stay separate from everybody that we've been taught to fear? Because ultimately we fear ourselves. You know, what is it that we're running from that is causing the perpetuation of a behavior that we all know is insanity?
Before I move on to the salve that is nature and trees, because we're heading that way naturally. I sort of in some ways feel that life is dealing us with the very thing that is going to take us away from that consumption. So we're getting these lessons, and I think most people listening would be aware that, you know, just like you've been getting these very literal lessons, like a male voice as you carry your car, you know, telling you, hey, you're going to have to do something, get on board, fire up.
I mean, it feels surreal at the moment, whether we look at Trump, whether we look at COVID, these pandemics that are connecting us but then splintering us, and there's this volatile space that we find ourselves in. And I think many of us are just like walking around bewildered. We can't quite fathom that it's all happening. But, I mean, I feel for myself that these things that are happening, as well as stuff that's happening at my individual level, are very much those wake-up calls. They're the mirror, and, you know, getting a lesson. And, you know, it could potentially be the thing that takes us away from this victim consciousness, away from the consumption, to that connection with ourselves. So I guess the question I'm asking is it all a gift?
I think the very wise thing to do is to choose that it is.
Yeah.
You know, ultimately, we get to choose how we use our mind, and how we use our mind determines how useful we are in the world. If I look at what's going on, which I do, as vast social manipulation, as complete government neglect of people, especially the children, of Indigenous people around the world, of anybody that's basically not white and male, of, you know, of the islands in the Pacific which are going underwater, of everything that's in the way of just making money at the greatest cost to the most people, you know, I can look at that and I can tell myself there's absolutely no hope. Get off, you know, like, just, I don't know, dig a big hole and drop into it. And it renders me completely useless. Like, it renders me useless, ungrounded, disconnected, unable to hear. And when I'm useless and disconnected, then I become a walking to-do list that is nothing to do with deep, connected sense of what life is telling me to do so that I can show up and actually be the thing that I'm supposed to be. If I use my mind to say, okay, wow, look at this bizarre circumstance that I find myself in. The apparency is it's over, but actually, you know what? I'm not giving one iota of my life force to that particular outcome, because I know that we create our reality. Therefore, I'm going to believe that between the remaining species on our planet that are still here, still waiting for us to wake up, between the wisdom of the trees, between everybody that is already awake and are striving to create more awakeness, you know, between everybody that's just on the edge of awakeness, that can hopefully be caught in the updraft of all of this, to Gaia herself, to the elemental beings, to the energies of the cosmos, to the vastness of life that does not want us to go out on shopping, that does not want us to trash this planet. If I log on to that, and if I make my purpose logging on to the bigger picture that I can trust, that I can say, there is a wisdom in here, I don't have to understand it, but I need to align with it, then I can be useful, then I can listen, then I can bring my gifts. I remember a member of my staff just saying, Claire, you can't keep falling apart like this. You know,
it's victim consciousness. Victim consciousness is really shit. It's a really boring way to live. And I think I am totally in agreement with you. It's a choice, and it's a choice, if we're going to keep it in fundamental psychological terms, to grow up. This is what full embodied adulthood is meant to be about. I say this often, we've been in a suspended state of adolescence, and that's what victim consciousness is. Oh, I understand consequences, but I'm just going to blame someone else, and I'm going to go and ask the manager, you know, to fix it.
And wait for daddy to save us, which is what we're doing with all these leaders. And that to me is like, if we're going to be as socially manipulated as we are, divided, like, oh yeah, let's divide them, then they're easier to manipulate. Okay, well, that's great, because we are easier to manipulate. Now you can terrify us with all these statistics about everything that's going to kill us. Right, okay. And it's just, the whole setup is so manipulative. To me, it's like somewhere in there, we have to become self-determining. Somewhere in there, there is the gateway to our own sovereignty, where we say, you know what? I'm not giving my power away anymore.
You bow to love.
Yeah, there is something else inside me.
To bow to love, and then also to live a life where we can bear ourselves.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more.
and is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Now, look, I want to move on to the nature part of things and trees. We need to liven things up, I think, but although I find your message completely hopeful, because it is a choice. We can either stay blaming, being polarised. Really, I'm bored of that. I want to fire things up. I want to inject a different way. It is time, and I can feel it, you know, at a very deep, visceral level. And the nature side of things, given that we're kind of clueless, we know nothing more than the capitalist model, the consumption model, the victim consciousness model, anyone who's alive on the planet today. And we wonder how we're going to be able to navigate all of this. And your answer, like quite a number of people, a growing number of people, is nature, is trees most specifically. And it's interesting, a lot of science and chat around the place at the moment is about the secret powers of trees. And they're not even that secret. To communicate, to love. I mean, I've interviewed Peter Walbin, the, you know, author of The Hidden Life of Trees. We've got the novel Overstory. Lots of chat about fungi and how amazing it is and how they communicate with trees. Nature shows us who we are. It shows us our best selves. It's an ultimate teacher. Can you talk that through for people who find that maybe a little odd? A little bit esoteric, a bit woo-woo. Can you break it down into sort of terms that most people might be able to relate to? I mean, at a ecological level, trees do stuff that can teach us stuff, right?
Well, if I just very simply talk about forest at the most basic level, you've got an unconditionally loving community. You've got a community of trees, all of whom are intimately connected to each other. There is no single one tree in a forest. They're all connected by their roots and by the mycelial network that basically connects them. And the mycelial network is like, I think of it like a global brain. You know, I think of the trees, people think of trees as the lungs, but I think they're the heart, the brain, the immune system, the liver. Like they, what they do for us is so vast and so complex and so important. This is why we simply cannot live without them. But they live in constant communication with each other. You know, the relationship between the trees themselves and the mycelium is this whole funneling of nutrients and of carbon, of nitrogen, of starch, like everything that's needed for everybody to function at their best. Like they're all helping each other out. But also the trees themselves, they understand that if one tree falls, then the wind can get in and it can start doing damage. So they don't want anybody, they don't want any one tree to be damaged. Therefore, they look out for each other because they understand what human beings don't, that if you take care of each other, then everybody benefits. If you make sure there's no one out on the street, everybody benefits. Like it's this uplifting everyone. So if there's a deciduous tree that is blocking out a coniferous tree while it's got leaves, then it will feed carbon to the coniferous tree. When that tree dumps its leaves, the coniferous tree is still produced, you know, it's still doing its thing, it'll give whatever it needs to the deciduous tree. Similarly, the birch trees in the coniferous forest, they carry the antibiotics inside them that promote health. So what have they done? They've taken those trees out of the forest. They've made it all monoculture and the trees are dying. Why? Because the reciprocal relationship between all these trees that ensures that everybody's unique gifts that contribute to the health of all have been destroyed in our way of doing forestry. We're not supposed to be monoculture. Nothing is supposed to be monoculture because all species are designed to interact for the benefit of all. Now, when you think about it like that, if you imagine that being the model for humanity, it's so incredibly beautiful. It's there for us. How about you all start acting like one community that actually cares about each other? How would our world be if we operated in the way that trees do?
It also explains in a way which I think our generation, the current generations, really struggle to understand, the idea of looking after the weakest link. Because the weakest link might just be the tree that's lost its leaves for a bit. And of course, if you look after it, it's then the tree that produces fresh leaves in spring, which then provides a whole heap of other benefits to the so-called stronger links. There's an understanding of this symbiosis where there's the weakest link becomes the strongest link that looks after you when you're the weakest link. And, you know, if we think about the COVID situation, that is the debate. That's the discussion we need to be having. A lot of what we're doing is to look after the so-called weaker links, the frail, the elderly, children, and so on. And we struggle with that conversation. It was probably almost a year ago, I was catching a train back to see my family, and I was passing through an area that had been completely decimated by the bushfires. And I just saw these trees as the train was sort of going through slowly through this section. And I wept. And I know that we have that in common as well. I find nature can actually make me cry in a way that very little else can make me cry. And it's the recognition of, it's the perfect mirror. It's the mirror back at us, but also I can feel deeply, I found myself on the train going, I'm so sorry. I'm so deeply sorry. And I'm not a woo-woo kind of person, but in nature I definitely feel that connection. For you, you talk about crying a bit. I know that you cry. Tell me what that relationship to crying when we're talking about nature, tell me about that.
It is my coping mechanism because I've made a commitment to stay in contact. I've made a commitment not to dissociate, because if I dissociate, then I'm just another number. I'm just another human being able to walk past complete destruction and act like it's normal. And that isn't a human being to me. That's a partial human being. And that's not, I'm not trying to be derogatory when I say that. What I mean by that is you're not having the full human experience. So crying to me is the gateway to my power. It's the gateway to my creativity. If I let myself grieve properly, then on the other side of it, there's always an idea or a concept. Yeah. And I'm that much more grounded and I'm that much more in touch with the thing that it is that I'm fighting for.
Yeah, it connects you. It completely brings you into congruence.
Brings me home. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Can I just ask, what, you know, for anyone listening, what are some ways that they can actually connect with nature, enable or allow nature to, going back to the wild idea that I flagged from the beginning, no one's going to come and save us. We can't be victims anymore, but trees might just be able to. What are some things that people can do that can connect them with the power of trees or nature more broadly, that can help them to access the space that sees them go into radical hope and action?
Well, there's the inner and the outer response to that. You know, the inner response being deepen your relationship, the outer response being help me reforest the planet, you know, like get more trees in the ground. So the inner response, you know, when you sit with somebody and you give them your full presence, like if I sit here and I give you my full presence and something starts to happen because there's a current that arises when you've got two highly present people, there's this third thing that arises that is the current of relationship out of which something else emerges. Like when somebody really, really listens to you and you find yourself speaking in a way that you've never spoken before.
Yeah.
There's a way that you can be with trees where you can, first of all, just switch off the part of your mind that goes, oh, it's a tree, because you've no idea what a tree is and you've no idea who that tree is either. But if you sit and you open the whole surface of your body and you soft gaze and you make yourself available and you act like there's this enormous being there who's been aware of you all this time and you've no idea, you know, how to be aware of them, but you let yourself be a mystery. You don't know what a human is. You don't know what the tree is. And you soften your body and you make yourself available. Then you can basically bow, say hello, say, I'm sorry that I've been basically ignoring you for, you know, if you're somebody that has never really bonded with trees for your whole life. And then just make yourself available. And you can start by just saying thank you. Like, just start by just saying thank you. Thank you for the million and one things that trees have given me. You know, think of your life without wood. Think of your life without paper. Think of your life without air. Think of your life without weather, without rain. All the things that trees give us. You know, just start by saying thank you. It's an amazing practice to practice gratitude. It's one of those things that connects you to your heart and then plugs you back in. So every meal that you have, look at the food that you've got. How many people have been involved in that? You know, do you thank the rain and the sun and the soil and the seed? You know, because if you do, then you're building an energetic relationship to that food that's going to mean that when you eat it, it's much more easy to digest because you're already in an energetic relationship with it. So it's this shift of perspective away from just seeing with your eyes everything and dealing with the world the way we've been taught, to realizing that there is a form of subtle relationship born of deepest intimacy where going around and acknowledging that you don't know and being tender and being gentle and being aware that there are conscious beings out there and then making your consciousness available to them, you'd be surprised what can happen. So ceremony, ritual, and then open your wallet.
Yep.
Open your wallet and think, okay, nature has given me absolutely everything and she's on the chopping board. What am I prepared at this point to start giving back to ensure that my children or my grandchildren have a hope in hell? Okay. Because we can plant trees all around the tropics for you at an extremely low cost. And that is a way that you can make a measurable difference every single month. Every single month, you will know that you're planting in the Amazonian rainforest of Brazil, the Atlantic rainforest of Brazil, but Mount Kenya, the coast of Mozambique, Madagascar, Nepal, India, West Papua, Borneo, astonishing projects that have, you know, extraordinary, beautiful social benefit, ecological benefit, benefit to each of us. They're not just over there. We cannot survive without the tropical rainforest of our world. The only reason we have temperate climate is because of what the tropical forests do to cool our world at the hottest band of her body, where she's brilliantly used that heat to generate cooling and rain creation. You know, it's like we're here because that's there and we're stripping that. Therefore, if we put our attention and our money and our funding and our businesses and whatever engines we've got of creating a flow of resourcing to those forests, we give ourselves more of a chance.
You call yourself an edge walker, and I talk about going to my edge. I am drawn to it. Pema Chodron says, you know, the edge is where we're meant to be. That's when we come fully online, when we're just a little bit scared, but we have to use all of our faculties. And I talk about fending. It makes us become really human in that we've got to ebb and flow with what's going on. And in fact, I use a metaphor of a tree to explain going to your edge. You can either live at the trunk, hanging on to it, and, you know, there's lots of familiar faces around you and it's all nice and cozy and protected. But the edge is where we need to be. We go out to the outer limbs where we need to use all our sort of core strength and agility to move with the branches. But it's out there we can see where it all fits in. Otherwise, we just think we're just a sort of a dark morass of people hanging onto a tree trunk, out on the outer limbs. Anyway, metaphors can go on forever. But I know that, you know, you have been responsible for funding the planting of up to 20 million trees around the tropics.
Not me. I didn't do it.
Well, the people that you have inspired have done that. But more than that 20 million get destroyed daily around the world. Have I got that right?
Between 14 and 14 million trees a day.
Okay. So some people might see that as quite dispiriting. Like, you know, you've been working on this project for a number of years. They might find this dispiriting. So what do you get from it? What is the thing that still keeps you going, I know this is what I'm meant to be doing. This is the right thing to be doing. This will be the change maker.
I don't know that this will be the change maker. What I know is I can only live with myself if I am a change maker. I only know, regardless of outcome, I am so pissed off we're only at 20 million trees. Other people look at us and go, oh my God, 20 million trees, that's amazing. And I'm like, we're not even scratching the arse of this thing. You know, if you really understand the science, if you really know where we're going, and yet That's 20 million more trees than there would have been if we hadn't done something. And 20 million trees is not nothing. And more importantly, it's all the people that have contributed to that that know that they've made a difference. And it's the people that they're touching. And it's the people on the ground who have experienced the support coming in, that they're cared enough, that we want to help them restore their environment. And it's the species that are still here because of those environments. So you have a choice where you put your mind. You have a choice how you perceive. You know, I would be lying if I said I perceived what we've done as a huge success, but I also know that it is a success because I walked into this job with no experience whatsoever, none, nothing, apart from a broken heart. That was all I brought to the table and a willingness to have a go. And I didn't want to have a go. You know, it's been excruciating. I have gone through every shame. Well, I won't say that because I'm going to touch wood. Life will do the next thing. I've gone through so many deaths in myself of the things that I have hidden behind and cloaked myself and the excuses that I've got and the bullshit that I tell myself and all the reasons why to stay small. And at the end of the day, if all I get to do is live the sort of life where I say, you know what? I'm not held back by what people think of me anymore. I'm not. I don't care what people think about me. Not really. What I care about is what I think about me. And I need to know that I am doing everything for the world's children. I didn't have children because I couldn't handle bringing them into the world that we've got. But my God, I cannot handle what we're handing them. So this life, this outspokenness, this courage that I have is for them. It's because when they turn to me and say, why are my parents not doing anything and they're crying? You know, I can say some of us adults have put our lives on the line and we will do it till our last breath for you. And that means I can look them in the eye. You know, that's why I'm doing this, because they matter and the children of every other species matter. And whether I manage to do something extraordinary, half-hearted or whatever, doesn't matter. What matters is that I'm trying. And that's my message to everybody. That is the message.
Surely it's broader than that, because you're wanting it to be contagious. Because we have a chance of saving this if there's an exponential movement where we're all contributing to 20 million trees. We're all inspiring people, you know, to create 20 million, 20 million, 20 million daily.
A trillion trees. We need a trillion trees. We need more than a trillion trees. And we could do it if every single person on this planet realized that we're not just here to take, we're here to give back. And that giving back is a privilege, because none of us would treat our mother the way we're treating our mother. None of us.
Yeah.
And giving back, you know, giving back puts you into connection with the life force that helps remind us who we are. So you get to belong again. You know, you get to care deeply. You get to feel part of it. You get to feel part of the solution. So I want, you know, ultimately what I'm working towards, every business, every financial transaction. I don't want us to be able to do anything without there being a tree embedded in, so that you cannot take without giving back. So I'm calling to every business leader that's out there that's listening to this, or every person in a business who can go to your business leader and say, can we embed trees in our products and services? Can we embed trees in our benefits? If we're at school, can we raise funds for trees? If we're at home, if you're self-employed, can you embed trees? If we're doing gatherings, can we have trees in tickets? Like, can we see a world where you can't turn around without somehow a tree being generated? You know, a tree with tree sisters is 40 pence. It's 40 pence. There's no excuse. You can grow a forest every month and you can watch it grow. You know, it's like, this is a no-brainer. Like, people act as if we're somehow helpless and we just have to keep going and maybe our recycling will help us. You know, it'll save us. It's not going to. But if you start saying, what's the most I can give every month, and you watch this forest grow, you will feel different and the world will change.
I think the trees at 40 pence each is only one part of it. I think from what I gather from you is it's also the engagement in, you know, that intimacy with the evolutionary impulse, and that is to care, right? I mean, that's the more important aspect of it. It doesn't matter, of course it matters about the trees, but the point is engage back at that level of care. And I experience this, I think, daily, and I imagine you would too. I have people that come up to me and go, oh gosh, you know, what are we meant to do? Everything's terrible. What should I do? Or I also get this, I'm so glad you're doing something, Sarah. I had this morning. I went and took my, you know, my reusable cup to the coffee shop in COVID. I know that there's about five select cafes that will take my cup. people say, oh, you know, with their disposable cup, they said to me, this guy said to me, oh, I'm so glad you do it for the rest of us. And of course, I've had that comment made a few times. There's this idea that everyone's glad there's somebody else out there doing something, right? You know, oh, Claire's off planting trees. Oh, thank God for that, you know.
I've had that numerous times. Oh, thank God you're doing it so I don't have to. And I'm like, you don't have to? Really? You think you're off the hook? You think you're off the hook? You know, this is not a spectator sport. Get off the bench.
Yeah. And I want to finish off. I've got a quote that is one of my favorites, and I think I would like you to do almost like a coach-like rally call for people to get off the bench off the back of this quote. So Martin Luther King Jr. said, you know, made the famous call, would you want to sleep through the revolution? So after you've had all the discussions in the world about hope and activism and all of this kind of thing, the point is, would you want to be asleep through this incredible evolutionary leap, as you call it, this incredible shift, to a point where we might be able to actually bear ourselves? Now, what would you say to get people off that bench and engaged and wide awake during this revolution? Because I find it exciting. I am so excited about the solutions that are ahead of us and the kind of person I can become while being engaged in it.
Absolutely. I'm there with you. You know, I think many of us actually long for intensity in our lives. We want the intensely good feelings. We want to feel fully alive. And what happens is if we block ourselves off from the bad stuff, if we just say, oh, I can't turn towards that, I can't turn towards that, I can't turn towards that, your pendulum, the pendulum that you are that swings to the shadow, you only let it go that far. Well, then by the law of dynamics, if you only go that far into your shadow, you can only go that far into your joy. So if you want a spontaneous, incredible, creative, passionate, outrageous life, then you're going to have to do better than just go, no, I'm in denial and I'm not going to let myself feel this. So yes, it involves swinging into the reality of the sixth mass extinction. It involves swinging into the genuinely not knowing whether we're going to get through. It involves genuinely looking at the fact that you have not cared and you have not felt and you have gone along with it and you've given your power away and all of that stuff, and facing that and then realizing when you hit your grief and you let yourself feel it, that you can swing into this vastly amazing, fully alive experience of yourself that will not take it sitting down anymore and that is up for discovering what the hell it is that we're made of. And that means the intense joy, relief, privilege, creativity, aliveness that becomes part of your everyday experience. You know, why would you not want that vivid life, that life brilliantly lived? You know, that is what's, you know, I keep saying to people, climate change is the gauntlet that we have created to lay down to ourselves to say, are you going to discover what you're made of? Denial is not an option. You know, it's not a river in Egypt and it's not an option. Like, if you are going to stay in denial, you are missing the greatest opportunity we have to turn ourselves as a species around. Just because we can't see how we're going to do it doesn't mean that the path isn't encoded in us somewhere and that it's through our bodies and our genius and our willingness to open to possibility that it can come. We have to birth it. You don't see what the baby is before it's out. We don't know what it is that we're about to birth. But it cannot be an extension of where we're going. It has to be a values-based, regenerative world that holds space for everybody. It needs to be human being made forest, human being prepared to care for everybody, to nourish everybody, to bring our gifts, to live totally. A tree does not half-heartedly drop its leaves. It does not half-heartedly go into fruit. It gives it all. It does it totally. That's the invitation from nature. Live fully. Discover what you are as a human being. Be outrageous. We're not born to be polite and appropriate. There's nothing appropriate about a woman, you know? There barely anything appropriate about a man. But for God's sake, let's take off our brakes and discover what we're made of. Now is the time. Now, right now. Now. Absolutely now.
Yeah, let's take off the brakes. And I think, you know, nature, trees is the best teacher until we get the hang of it, until we get the hang of being ourselves once again.
Cool the world. Mm. Cool the world. Be cooling the world. Be restoring the world. Get on that train of restoration whilst you figure out who you are and what your gifts are. Just start. Start giving back. TreeSisters.org/give. There it is. We'll do it for you. We are brilliant at doing that. Let us do it for you. Let us make it easy for you.
I'll put that link in the show notes. Claire Dubois, thank you so much. Thank you for your effervescence. Thank you for being intimate with the evolutionary impulse on our behalf so that we can then learn how to do it ourselves. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for an outrageous ride and for so much bloody research. Good grief.
That was a lot to take in, or to feel into, more to the point. I took notes throughout my chat with Claire, and there were a few highlights or take-homes which really struck me. We long for intensity, like we actually crave it. So the invite is to be an edge walker, which is how she describes herself in her bio on her website, because the alternative, and she mentions this at some point in our chat, the alternative is to be a walking to-do list. The other thing she says is that climate change can show us what we are made of, what it is to be fully human. That's what's going on right now, and this comes up a lot in this podcast series. She recommends sitting before a tree or under a tree to get intimate with the evolutionary impulse, just to feel it and to not know what the tree is, but to know that it is a being. And that enables us to be our full self. Treat life as an experiment. She said that at the very beginning of our chat. Treat life as an experiment because you can't fail an experiment. You just stay in a space of trying, continually going to your edge. But it's the image of the pendulum right at the end that really stayed with me. And it's this idea that, you know, if you put the brakes on, the pendulum swinging out into fear and pain and all the stuff that we're scared of, particularly in the face of the pandemic, the climate crisis and so on, then equally it stops that pendulum swinging back the other way into full throttle excitement and intensity and joy. And that's the choice we can make. Me, I choose not to put the brakes on because I do not see the point, and especially at the moment because I know that what this is all about is firing up into my full humanness so that I can live the most wild version of this precious life.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.